Greetings, comrades, and welcome to the Eastern Border. I'm a bit sad today because it's kind of hard to record this episode, but I should, since, well, a person that I knew personally, a journalist from The Insider, which is was a Russian media source, which is that it's registered in Riga, Latvia, together with Medusa. They are one of the guys who, you know, moved to my country after Putin decided to clear Russia of independent media. Well, a reporter, Oksana Baulina, was killed in Kyiv shelling. And she was the fifth, as far as we know, journalist that has died in Russia. She also had worked for the Russian opposition, Alexei Navalny's anti-corruption foundation, and she was killed alongside another civilian while reporting for the Insider about the previous strikes that happened there. The Insider stated that they expressed their deepest condolences to Oksana's family and friends, and I expressed the same. They also said that, quote, "We will continue to cover the war in Ukraine, including such Russian war crimes as indiscriminate shelling of residential areas, which result in the deaths of civilians and journalists." Baulina started her career for lifestyle magazines, including Time Out Moscow and In Style. But at one point a decade after that, she shifted to more political work, becoming a producer for Navalny and decided to change something in her country to make it a better place. She was briefly jailed when the Russian police stormed Navalny's anti-corruption foundation's HQ, where she was coordinating a live broadcast from a national rally. That was, you know, that was after they declared anti-corruption foundation an extremist organization in 2021. So that's when Baulina left Russia. And yeah, after Russia invaded, Baulina filed reports from Kiev and Lviv in Western Ukraine for The Insider. And that's a really, really deep blow to journalists on the Eastern border. Well, Alexei Kovalyov, also another person that I know, the investigations editor at website Medusa, also based here in Riga, paid tribute to Baulina's phenomenal sense of moral clarity. Quote, he tweeted, "Oksana ditched a successful career in glossy magazines. I first met her at Time Out Moscow in 2006, where she edited the fashion section, to become an opposition activist, human rights campaigner, and then full-time reporter. Arrested several times, her org declared extremist." Anastasia Krimova, a program director at the Foundation for Democratic Development in Washington, tweeted, "The Russian army has killed one of Russia's best people." And I agree with that. This is another casualty of this war, and it strikes me personally as well, which is something that, you know, in the past month I've been seeing too much. Yeah. But onwards to a bit more news about the rest of the situation. Apparently, there are some encirclements around northern parts of Kiev. South, well, apparently the separatists in Donbas are making some small progress, just a few kilometers here and there, but nothing much. According to Ukrainian sources, the Russian army is now pulling back to defensible positions and trying to prepare and defend. The Ukrainian army, one of the generals there who was in an interview for Michael Naki yesterday, he stated that the Ukrainian army is doing counterattacks where they can, but whilst Russia has an issue with manpower due to their lack of troops, they have more tanks and everything, but they literally lack people who would drive them, Ukraine has the opposite problem, and they are experiencing material shortages, they just can't gather enough forces to do counterattacks. They can do that in the areas where the Russian forces have been exhausted maximally and where they've been weakened. So Kiev was again shelled, and again I believe that this night might be a crucial one, since the fist of Russia's forces there could be just gathering up, but their counterattack seems risky. Minister of Defense of Russia, Shoigu, has still not been found anywhere. He's still gone from the 12th of March, and we haven't seen of him. And, you know, he was rumored to have some involvement in a possible coup. Maybe he's just captured and being punished. Can't really comment on that part, but hey, maybe. At the same time, Russia intends to create their own war tribunal to punish what they call, create show trials for what they call hostile elements. They wish to basically, you know, parrot what's going to most likely happen to them after this war, because they don't want to be left alone. At the same time, United States has again declared that there are even more sanctions coming. German Gref, a personally hated person by a lot of economical analysts that I know, the CEO of Sberbank, is also put under sanctions, because currently 328 Gosduma deputies and 48 defense businesses have also been sanctioned. Russia have blatantly stolen all the airplanes what they could. They're trying to cannibalize them in the situation. I was afraid that they might be taking over some Lufthansa factories, but apparently that hasn't happened, since they're cannibalizing their internal airplanes, and that's going to be bad. We have to take into account that that it's quite likely that airplane prices will rise and travel time will also increase. One thing that I heard on Wendover Productions, who does airplane and logistics documentaries, is that Anchorage in Alaska might, just like in the Cold War era, once again become a hub where planes from United States and Asia stop to get refueled. So that's one of the things. Also, from an economical perspective, as well, again, most of my Russian sources, those who don't directly comment on the war, because, you know, only commentary we can get from Russia, inside Russia, is from very pro-Putin perspective. Here you can, but you can hear still economical criticisms. And apparently outside of Moscow, one thing that I mentioned that would happen, and that is happening right now, is the utter deficit of female hygiene products. Similar things is happening in Belarus as well, as they're allied. Yeah. And their advisory board stated that women should just do more sports, and then they won't have such issues, which is pretty scary. One other thing that happened is that that our prime ministers of the Baltic states visited Kiev. Well, high representatives of the government. It was Inara Murnits from Latvia. And Lithuania has declared that Suvalki corridor needs to be protected. Recently, Foreign Policy wrote about this. One John R. Deny, he wrote about Suvalki corridor, and Suvalki corridor is basically the border between Lithuania and Poland, which sits on the shortest point between Belarus and Kaliningrad, which is the only way how the Baltic countries are tied to the rest of Europe, rest of NATO countries, by land. This is about 70 kilometers long corridor, which is just very difficult to defend, because it consists of mostly farmland, and there are two rail lines going across it. And more, it seems that because of the sanctions, and Russian political analysts and military analysts, specifically the Conflict Intelligence Group, they've been saying that, as illogical as it seems, but an invasion in my home country of Latvia and Estonia and Lithuania seems to be likely, because Kaliningrad currently is running low on supplies, because trucks can't go there and trains can't go there. So Kaliningrad, which is basically a fortress region, because there's a whole corpus, whole corps of soldiers there, and there is also also rockets there, and there is the Baltic Sea Fleet base there. So it's a heavily fortified area, and the kind of this taking of Suwalki Corridor has been planned in Zapad military exercises, which are constantly done by Russia and Belarus. So if this war goes badly and Kaliningrad gets into trouble, because again it's a major military center and it needs resupplies, and if Putin decides that stuff's going weird for him, yeah, the Suwalki Corridor needs to be watched carefully. And although some people might write it off as paranoia, you know, everyone also thought that that invading Ukraine was stupid and that would never happen. But now we saw what happened. Those are the initiatives, and a lot of people here are still wondering about NATO involvement, and also a lot of people in Russia itself, because a lot of people say, well, what would change the fact about, you know, if they would attack us, and what would Poland do? Uncertainty just lingers on and becomes more and more stressful as the situation moves onward. That's it for today. Yeah, thank you to everyone who supported the show. If you want, you can do that as well. If you're listening to this on YouTube, I don't care about YouTube. Maybe you want to listen to Spotify or my webpage or something. Happiness is mandatory. And до свидания, товарищи.